Now, on the BBC World Service, Laverne Antrobus tells the story of a mobile clinic delivering affordable healthcare to South Africa's poorest communities.
6 years ago, I came to South Africa and I volunteered aboard the Pelepepa Health Train, a train that travels the length and breadth of South Africa, offering medical services to the rural community. It was one of the most uplifting but challenging experiences of my life. Here I am again. I arrived in Johannesburg, took a flight to the Eastern Cape, got into a car knowing that I had a three-hour drive ahead of me, along winding roads, into mountainous countryside, past settlements, with birds of prey swooping overhead, cattle drifting in and out of the road, occasional monkeys by the side, and suddenly I found myself arriving in a town called Alice. And my impression of Alice? Well, it seems a bit of a run-down town to me, with a wholly black community. I've read there are about 10,000 people who live here. But in the distance, I can see this smart, shiny university, which somehow doesn't fit with the whole picture of poverty that surrounds it. Like at the train station where I'm standing, which is crumbling. There is rust everywhere, the tracks, the signs, and the ticket office that once was just seems to be patched together with corrugated iron. And even the concrete signs bearing the name Alice have collapsed to the floor. Yet here on the track stand 18 gleaming carriages, which make up the Pelepepa Health Train, probably the first train that's been through the station in months. Patients are gathering to be seen, and clinicians in white coats are preparing for a long, busy day aboard this mobile medical service.
The train itself is 18 coaches long, beginning with coach number one, which is made up of two Volvo engines, and then coach number two, which is a laundry room. Coach number three then is the accommodation coach for the logistics, maintenance and catering staff. Coach number four is the kitchen, and then coach number five is the dining car.
And in charge of this medical service is the train manager, Onki Mazibuko.
Coach number 14 and 15 are the eye clinic, and then coach number 16 is the pharmacy, as well as my room, far away from everybody else. And then coach number 17 is the accommodation for the security guards, and then coach number 18 is the storage coach.
The Pelepepa Health Train couldn't exist without funding, which comes from various organisations and sponsors. The healthcare company Roche has been on board since the early days, and they've been joined by other multinationals. In 2012, a second train was launched to expand the service. And at the core of all of this is Transnet, South Africa's state-owned freight railway service.
The idea for the train came from a optometry professor from the University of Johannesburg, and he approached Transnet with the idea of getting three coaches that were going to be used as an eye clinic that would go to the rural communities. Then in 1994, the Transnet Foundation came up with the idea of this Pelepepa healthcare train. And it was also in 1994, which of course was the year that South Africa got its democracy. So I think in that way, it signaled that effort that needed to be made towards nation building, towards getting over differences. And of course, now there's no more segregation, everyone's coming together. Our management were big on the idea of let's take various disciplines and put them together on this one train and get people from different backgrounds to go to places they haven't been to in the country to help people who speak a different language. And I think that's what the project has embodied.
Number 68.
The train hasn't been here for 2 years. And that feels quite stunning to me that, you know, some of these people might have been living with issues for 2 years. And it just feels like quite an emotional place to be. You know, as a black woman myself, I'm standing here amongst a sea of black faces who perhaps don't take things for granted in the way that I do. I feel a bit of an outsider, but I want to be in it and to learn something about what it feels like for them to come today.
Gaan dit goed? Ek is bly om dit te hoor. Jy kan so 'n bietjie die Afrikaans praat. Ja, jy kan Afrikaans praat.
So I'm sitting at the eye clinic with the student optometrist, and this is Corin, who's waiting for some patients to arrive today.
Yes.
And your first time on the health train?
No, second time actually.
Second time. Yeah. And what does it feel like? I mean, I volunteered on the health train. I'm a psychologist, so I was in the psychology clinic. What does it feel like to come back?
It's actually quite mind-blowing to think the people sleep here overnight. They're so desperate for help, and we usually see between 120 and 200 patients a day in the eye clinic alone. and we're only 10 student optometrists, so it's a lot of work and it's a lot of patients to see.
I've got a patient, so I won't interrupt anymore.
No, that's fine, thank you.
There's a lady who's sitting in front of the desk at the moment who unfortunately isn't going to be seen today because she hasn't been able to register before all of the stickers have been given out. She says that she's travelled 100 kilometres at a cost of 10 rand, which is, you know, just a pound, but probably money she can ill afford, and won't be able to make that journey back home and here again tomorrow. And as she's sitting with her headscarf on and her bright yellow blanket, you know, I'm beginning to think that maybe she's going to have to stay overnight. It's not easy weather in South Africa at the moment. As the seasons change, it's getting much colder. So the idea of her having to sit on one of these grey, hard plastic chairs for the whole night and try and get some sleep, or at least take her place in the queue for tomorrow, is the real story of the train, actually, that there are many people who come too late to register, can't go home and have to stay for the next day.
In the rural communities, the number of people that get treated by one doctor is actually scary. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of positions that you find aren't filled. And because of the sheer number of people living in rural areas and also access to them, like the roads, taxis or railway line or however they travel, people themselves have difficulties getting to the nearest facilities. That's why when we speak to our patients and find out from them why do they insist on sleeping outside the train to be helped the next day, they tell us that they would rather sleep here for a day or two rather than be put on a 3-month or 4-month waiting list to a clinic that might be 40 kilometers away from where they live.
She says she can't even read her Bible, so that's why she wants to get help. She says she's going to sleep here so that she can get help tomorrow. God gave her the wisdom to be patient.
Are you going to be okay staying here tonight?
The clothes that she's wearing are not enough, but she's going to be patient and in order for her to get help.
Where does this patience come from? How old are you?
88.
Where do you live? Have you got a family around you? Have you been able to contact them? Will they be worried about you tonight?
So she's staying alone at home. Only daughter is not working. She's drinking, so she's staying where they usually sell alcohol.
His son
is in Amtata looking for a job. But her daughter, doesn't want her to visit her. God will protect her since she's been staying alone at home.
It's my second morning at the Pelepepa Health Train. It's a much brighter morning, but in many ways the same scene as yesterday, with people waiting patiently in the seats. And the fruit sellers that are here with some sweets, oranges, bananas, things for people to eat whilst they do wait. And just behind me, all of the students also coming out of their cabins with their white coats, prepared for another day. Another probably quite intense day. And I'm making my way to the eye clinic because yesterday we left behind the lady with the yellow blanket who had come at 10 o'clock in the morning and stayed the rest of the day, not able to register, and had made the decision that she was going to actually sleep overnight. She'd been on my mind overnight, and I've come back to see how she is. I've had a really good look for the lady with the yellow blanket. Actually, what feels quite appalling is that I don't even know her name. I don't think I asked her name, but she's definitely not here, which really feels quite upsetting after quite a cold night. But the interpreter has rushed over to me to say that whilst they cannot find that woman, she's found another woman who stayed overnight and she's willing to tell her story.
Thembela Khala.
Thembela Khala. Her name is Thembela Khala.
And how old is Thembela?
71, Papa.
71, and you stayed last night. How was it staying outside the train?
bekunjani ukuhlala kwakho makhulu lapha ngaphandle
kumandi ukufa besonwabile baphandle
it was wonderful she had a wonderful time
okay how many of you were there
30 to 40
was it cold last night
not bad
what made you stay
kaloku uyavukelwa abantu baninzi
because the queue is so long so exactly. She wanted to stay so that she can get help
so you wanted to make sure that you got seen today
exactly
yeah I've still got this picture in my mind of the lady with the yellow blanket who shared so much about her life and her family. And actually, I sat there next to her as she was in tears. And that left me with a sense of her being on her own. She'd be lonely. And here I have another story about a lady who says, well, actually, it was okay. You know, a number of us and we were a bit of a community and it was okay. So she turned it into something that I have to really translate into something's much more positive.
I'm feeling all right, Baba.
You have your glasses?
Exactly.
They look great. Thank you.
Baba,
bye.
Go slow.
Bye.
One of my standout memories being on the train really is quite a personal one. An adolescent boy came to see me. And actually, he came with quite a purpose. I remember him marching into the room and sitting down and saying, I hope you can help me. And he said he'd walked 2 or 3 hours to get to the train. And he then showed me some of his schoolwork, which he'd brought, which showed that he was having real difficulty at school. And I asked him a few questions, see whether or not I could detect any sort of learning difficulties that seemed quite obvious. I ended up writing a letter for him to the local, what I suppose would be the equivalent of the local authority. And said to him he'd have to take it. That journey was probably 2 hours out of his way in order to get home. And off he went. And I can remember at the end of the day having a debrief and saying, you know, who knows if that will make a difference. And then on the last day that I was here, there was a knock on the door. He'd walked back to tell me that he'd delivered the letter. He'd actually met somebody in the office who said to him that on the strength of the letter, they would give him some extra lessons every evening. And he'd come back to tell me, which, you know, incredible that he could have walked those distances, but he wanted me to know that it had a good end. I've had to leave the train behind temporarily because we've come on a school visit with Venny. You know, the school teacher in me from the past really, you know, wants to go and seek out the children and see what they're up to. We're going to meet this classroom of expectant children now, aren't we? Can you just briefly tell us what you're going to do?
I am from the psychology clinic on the Pella Pepper healthcare train. What we're going to do is work with a class of learners and they will have access to their negative emotions and heal that where they can become healthier with their emotions.
So just walking into a pretty full classroom of boys and girls who seem, you know, fairly adolescent teenage, all looking this way, but also looking at Venny, and they've got these absolutely immaculate uniforms on, blue pullovers with a white stripe around the V-neck.
So today we're working with our feelings. Do you know what feelings are? Do you know sad?
I'm Akana James. Turning 18 on the 2nd of September. I'm doing grade 12.
And you've just been with Venny, and she's been doing a particular sort of program with you today. What did you take away from it?
It has taught me how to intervene with myself, how to ask myself when I'm hurt or sad, and how to heal myself.
Was there something particular that you can tell me that you thought of?
I thought of when I lost my mum, because I just lost her last year.
So you're still very, very early.
Yeah.
And do you mind telling me how she passed?
It was a car crash.
So quite a shock.
Yeah, it was, but it's getting better every day now.
And who do you live with now then?
My stepmom and my dad.
Right. And what do you think you do use in order to help you cope with something like losing your mum? How have you coped?
Writing down to my diary and crying a lot every day.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
helped. So. And talking to my friends someday when I meet with them, yeah. that also helped.
So this pain, you will understand that that person that hurt you also had pain. Can you understand that? Okay. Who hurt you that day? Is your mother or your father or somebody like that?
My name is Vuyile Gonqisa. I am 17 years old and I'm doing grade 12 in Jabavu High School.
What did you make of what you heard this morning?
Yes, I think it was very useful. Mm-hmm. And it was also emotional for me because she asked me about the who hurt you the most in the past. And
then
I picked my cousin. Okay, I can't say what he did to me,
okay.
But it was very painful.
Right.
And I never told my mother about it or anyone in our family. Mm-hmm. But today she gave me courage to do so. I'm going to tell them.
When you say it got opened up, is it something that's been on your mind every so often, or did it just come back this morning?
It did come back a few times,
mm-hmm.
but I would like brush it away, like
mm-hmm.
I would do something fun mm-hmm. to forget about that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But today she gave me the courage not to hide anything. When I feel the pain, then I must take it out.
I've just driven away from the school, slightly outside of Alice, and I'm sitting on the top of a hill, looking back over the houses of the township. And thinking that I picked two children from that class of 49, and those two children gave such an impression of the distress and the trauma that they'd been through. And as a psychologist, I'm slightly left with a feeling of things being opened up. And what do the children do with that? You know, how do they move on by themselves to think about what's been opened up today, to reflect on it, and to build something from it, to build some resilience from it? And my overriding hope is that, you know, this will be recognised and that people on the train will go back to that school. But I think the reality is that, you know, this is a train that tries to do so much but is only there for a week. And so the reality for some of those children who have had very personal issues opened up is that they may be left with the wound, as they describe it, and they may have to do quite a bit of that work on their own.
My name is Tamsanga Nelson Dick.
You live nearby?
I would say about 3 to 5 kilos, you know. I'm staying alone now. My children are old, you know, I've got grandchildren. I left them in Bloemfontein,
mm-hmm.
actually. I came back home because I was a soldier there, deployed there, you know. Yes.
You were a soldier?
Yes, I was a soldier from a former MK, that is a military wing of the African National Congress.
Right.
Yes, I joined it in 1962. Sent to Robben Island for 9 years.
You went to Robben Island?
Yes, I was there.
So you've had quite a struggle. Harriet, don't let us interrupt you. You carry on.
Okay,
that's fine. I also want a medical checkup, you know.
Okay, I will see.
Because I've got a terrible headache just behind, you know.
That headache is usually due to stress.
How to get rid of stress? That's another thing.
But I will send you to the coach.
Okay.
Is that what you do? You refer patients on?
Great. Yes, yes.
So this is the health clinic registration desk.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the patients come mainly with musculoskeletal problems, you know, backache, sore knees, joint and whatever. And I think it's due to the fact that it's a rural area. So they get involved in doing hard labor, whether at home or at the farms. They walk long distances, carrying water, you know.
I don't know, it's this cap's a little bit tight, but the headache is always there.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about your life now?
I married in 1976. Then 2003, she was involved in an accident and she died.
You know, I suppose somebody like me, because I'm a psychologist, might think that you've had a lot of pain in your life. You know, losing your wife.
No, that's true.
You know, and
that's
actually
true.
Sometimes it's hard to recover from that sort of emotional pain, which does hurt.
That's true. It does somehow affect me because another thing which I forgot to tell you is with my wife, I had 3 children. 2 daughters and a son. 14, 15, they started smoking. we call it dacha, you know, mm-hmm. which is bad, you know.
Strong.
He was involved, you know, in criminal acts, like stealing cars, you know. He ran away, he was missing for a week, two. After coming back, he was mentally, you know, ill. We have to take him to the hospital. So up to now, he's still that case, on and off, on and off, on and off.
He's got mental health issues. He's got,
yes.
Okay. And your wife, I mean, it sounds tragic, but how did she die?
Every day they had to cross the tar road, you know, uh-huh. with her daughter. And they were holding hands like this. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the car hit her.
So hard for everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. your daughter as well.
She's very brave, that one.
Yeah.
Oh, I just only visited church just now, you know.
Does going to church help
well,
you?
Well, it does, it does.
It's a relief from the pain,
a bit of relief from the pain, you know.
A lot of people say to us, why do we have psychology on the train? If a lot of the communities we go to, people don't actually know what psychology is. But then if you give people an opportunity to talk, you realize that they've got a lot to tell you. And whether they're being treated in the health clinic, the dental clinic, or the optometry clinic, it all comes down to their personal story. And I think in that way, that's where the psychology comes into it, you know. So I think that component of focusing on people and allowing them to open and listening to them is where it comes into everything that we do. We aim to see 1,250 patients, that's to register them in the clinics, which would break down to about 320 per week in the dental clinic, 650 in the health, and about 545 in the eye. But the reality is that we end up seeing about 2,500. Now, on top of those numbers, if we see a total of 500 people in one day, there's another 200 or 300 that we haven't seen, that came to the train, literally, and we had to turn them away.
I'm at the end of my week on the train, and it's hard to sum it up, but I've almost got a picture in my mind, which is a sea of faces, you know, the woman with the yellow blanket, the wonderful interpreter that helped us so much along the way, and all of the students, you know, really busy and so committed to the work that carries on here. And also a sense that this train will carry on journeying through the countryside, almost replicating the journey that South Africa's on, which is one of change and shifting and helping people to think about what they need and deserving more, deserving better. And I suppose that's what I think about the train, that actually it will keep on this fantastic journey until change is evident everywhere and that it's really no longer needed. Pela Pepper, the story of the South African health train, was presented for the World Service by me, Laverne Antrobus, and produced by Karen Greger.